There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Welcome to the Old Nerdist Podcast number 453. This is my holiday voice, Katie.
It's so...
Shut up, Katie. What do you want holiday for Christmas?
I'm Jewish.
So you want to find Jesus. Come on now. Jewish. I love the... I'm Jewish. Why would you...
I am. Hanukkah already happened. It passed.
Why would you... Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Yeah. Hanukkah passed?
I miss it.
When? Yeah. When? What happened? I just talked to Hanukkah like a week ago.
Well, you know, had a good run. Eight days.
Damn.
8 nights. Whatever.
8 days and 8 nights. Yeah. Did you get a lot of good Hanukkah presents?
I didn't get any.
What? Yeah. What's the point of having 8 Hanukkah nights if you don't get presents?
I think it's for kids.
Is it?
I feel like it's for kids.
Because I don't feel like... I feel like I would want to be all over that business if I were Jewish. I would want 8 days worth of stuff.
I should. I should call my parents.
Is your boyfriend Jewish?
No.
That's the problem. You're either going to have to convert him or you might have to upgrade if you want some of this. Or maybe you guys could just break up for 8 days.
8 days.
You could find a Hanukkah boyfriend.
Yes. A Hanukkah boyfriend.
Just a Hanukkah boyfriend. Right?
Yeah. Go on J-Date and ask for a Hanukkah boyfriend.
Well, I hope you had a nice Hanukkah, and I hope you guys all have a lovely Christmas. There's a lot of Nerdist stuff. Go to Nerdist.com. Nerdist on Instagram. I don't know. At Midnight's coming back January 6th. I feel stupid promoting stuff. Except for Stamps.com, who was kind enough to sponsor this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which it is the holidays, and I know that Hanukkah is done. So you don't need to be sending Hanukkah presents, but Christmas is just so around the corner that it's poking you in the eye. Mm-hmm. So now you are in holiday season. It's the worst time to be at the post office. So don't do that. Go to stamps.com, sign up, get an account, print out and any amount of U.S. postage that you need. Slap it on the package, the exact amount, so you won't waste any money. And your mail carrier, whose backs and knees will probably be buckling from the pressure of carrying stuff for the holidays, will come and get that from you and deliver it where it needs to go. It's easy. It's convenient. Please, please, please save yourself the mental anguish and use stamps.com. There is a no-risk trial, as there always is. Use the promo code NERDIST, get a $110 bonus offer, which includes a digital scale and up to $55 of free postage. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone on the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That's stamps.com into the promo code Nerdist. This episode is Taron Killam, who you may know from SNL. He is a hilarious and delightful man. Guy, he is so delightful, Katie.
He was.
It makes me angry how delightful he is. He's just a guy that when he walks into a room, you're like, that guy is friendly and funny, and I want to hang out with that guy. And we got to. We all got a little piece of Taron Killam.
He was very nice.
Which we were able to record. and we actually have proof of that. And he also is a comic writer. He created a comic book called The Illegitimates that is, we talk about it in the podcast, but it's an amazing premise for a comic. And it releases December 18th. And so get that by the time this, that's in a couple days by the
two
time
days.
This drops. You might be on a 2-day delay by listening to this podcast anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because we put out so freaking many of them that you might be a little bit behind. So I recommend The Illegitimates, and I recommend following Taron Killam. That boy's going places.
Yes.
Do you think he has Christmas in his heart, or do you think he's like you?
I think he has Christmas in his heart.
He has Christmas. Yeah. You got Hanukkah in your heart. It's a menorah-shaped heart.
It is.
Your heart has 8 chambers. It's twice as many.
Yes.
Right?
think.
To the internet.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nerdist Podcast number 453 with Taryn Killam.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Michelangelo down there?
What? Where?
The Michelangelo suit.
Oh, is no, that belongs to...
No. Okay. I think that's just on loan from, what's his face?
Da Vinci?
No, creator of...
There you
Kevin
go.
Eastman. Eastman, yeah. Kevin Eastman. There you go.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, Kevin Eastman has a bunch of his stuff here.
Yeah. That's that series, that it's the TV series outfit, which
yes.
is pretty great.
Yeah, the live-action TV series.
Yeah, because the first Ninja Turtles is one of my favorite movies ever, and it's hard to subscribe to the look of a turtle.
I know you think that it is one of your favorite movies.
It holds up, guys.
Have you watched it recently?
Up.
Yeah. I haven't watched mine
I've
recently.
Watched it very recently.
Well, first of all, hey, Katie, can you close that door? I'm sorry, I didn't close that. First of all, let's just talk about that... The actor who plays Casey Jones.
Yeah, Elias Koteas.
Elias Koteas is one of the fucking greatest.
Ever.
And I don't know, I mean, I think kind of film nerds know who he is.
Yeah.
But every fucking movie that guy is in, he is, you cannot take your eyes off him.
He also ages back and forth so well.
Yes. Yes, he
like,
does.
Like, you'll see him and you'll be like, wait, he's a serial killer, like, aged, like, scrawny 80-year-old serial killer. And then you'll see him, like, do a guest spot on SVU or whatever. And he's, like, this, like, stud who works out in a gym.
Do you remember Some Kind of Wonderful?
No.
Oh, my God. Great fucking movie with Eric Stoltz. And it was sort of at the end of the Hughes era of...
Okay.
Teen movies, but it was Leah Thompson and Eric Stoltz and Mary Stuart Masterson and Elias Koteas is in it.
Oh, okay.
And he plays this punk kid, and it's oh my God, he's so good.
I'm gonna
you should watch
Netflix
it. Some kind of wonderful.
Flexible?
It's Netflix. Probably, it should be Netflixable.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you just pay the $8 for the DVD option, anything's right. Netflixable.
I guess that's true.
We've given up, haven't we? How sad that Blockbuster shut down all their stores officially, or is shutting them down by January.
I guess, but you know, I say that, but then. Part of me is like, but I never went to a Blockbuster, so it's not like I really. I
but
mean, not in
your
the
life,
in the
yeah,
in the, not in the last, not
right.
in the last handful.
It's
of
like
years.
The death. It's our death of record stores a little bit. I feel. Like.
Well, I don't know. Well, the reason that I don't feel
we went through both.
Yeah.
No, that's very true.
The
but
reason...
for me, like Friday night after school, going to rent either a video game or
sure,
a movie
yeah.
from Blockbuster.
The reason it doesn't bother me as much, other than the fact that a lot of people are out of work now, is that it bothers me in the sense that, I mean, it doesn't bother me in the sense that
those people can't come out to live shows we do.
Right.
I mean, look at all the free time they're going to have now.
Yeah.
No, but I guess it doesn't bother me in the sense that I feel like there's just a paradigm shift, and I feel like the way that it's shifted is much better than having to go and,
much more convenient.
Well, it is. I mean, you imagine, you know,
when
like
I was in high school, I really thought I'd crack the code and I wanted to start a video store that delivered, like you could call up like a pizza
and
just deliver movies.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be the thing that made
movie and a pizza delivery
billions of dollars.
I think I mourn too much the social engagement of showing up with a group, making a decision together.
Sure.
And especially like I grew up in a small town, so like it was like Bear City Video, and you'd go and you'd get ice cream and you like get a movie, and it was like, you know, it was the people you were with, not necessarily.
All right, I have a solution then.
Okay.
You and your friends,
yeah,
go to a yogurt land.
Great.
Talk about what movie you're going to rent.
Okay.
And then go back home to Netflix. You can all leave your house and then you can decide there and then go back home. But I always felt like, you know, there was almost that little bit of roll the dice of like, are they going to have the thing I want?
Sure.
How long can I spend looking at these boxes to figure out the sexual content based on the title and the cast?
Definitely. Yeah. But I would say I discovered a lot of movies that I wouldn't have seen because of that. Now I can always get what I want and always download what I want. But if,
I would say,
you know, Batman Forever wasn't in and I had to get, you know, whatever.
I missed out on
weird
some movies because
Steven Seagal thing
I was just daunted by two videotapes. So, like, I wouldn't rent the right stuff because it was two videotapes. JFK was two videotapes.
Yeah.
That's Braveheart.
That's a lot to do.
Double taper.
Two, you have to get off the couch, put the other one in, get back on the couch.
I always said if I was rich, I always wanted to get this was at the time of laser discs. I wanted to get a Laserdisc carousel and just double up the movies that were in there, so you never had to switch. Get up
movie
and switch
jukebox.
The side.
Well, now your now your phone is essentially that revolving carousel that you
I
always
understand.
Wanted. I was on a. I flew to North Carolina on Friday. I literally was just there Friday, and
boy, are your arms tired.
I discovered I have the power of flex.
That's huge, man.
So
that's
first
huge.
Of all,
first order of business.
I don't mind that my arms are tired because I can fly.
Let's back this up.
What?
First order of business is to fly to North Carolina.
Yeah. He's a huge Dawson's Creek fan.
I just wanted to go and see where Pacey lost his virginity on the dock.
You wanted to get into real into Spielberg.
Why do I know that about Dawson's Creek? That's Why awesome. Do I know those things?
Awesome. Pacey lost his virginity to Andy.
No,
the teacher.
Teacher.
Oh, to the teacher.
Lost it to the teacher.
Oh, when Andy and Pacey did it, that was when they played that Dave Matthews song.
Oh, that's where you anchor everything.
Yeah.
That's what was the song?
Anchor to the Creek.
Pacey, gonna be inside ya. Fiddle.
It was Lover Lay Down, which is track 6.
You better pace yourself, Pacey, before
you started crying
too
talking
fast.
About it.
Yeah, no, I can't.
You better pace yourself.
I openly weep
pacing.
A lot about the Dave Matthews.
You're gonna come too fast. And that teenage girl.
The teacher. I completely forgot about that storyline. So
that was huge.
Good on you guys.
Well, that was, you know, like Dawson's Creek was really that kind of groundbreaking. The same thing that Skins did.
Yeah.
Like Dawson's Creek did it earlier because television was much less racy at the time. So seeing, like having a storyline where a student fucks a teacher was unheard of. Like
huge.
That was, wow, this teenage drama show.
Talking to your female friend about walking the dog, which is something I never called masturbating, but that's what they called it. How often do you walk the dog? I remember it was like, I think that was like the first or second episode. This makes me so uncomfortable.
I only call it that because I put my dick on a leash.
Sure.
And I just do it on the sidewalk.
You're a freak. You're a freak on a leash.
Yeah, exactly. And I like to come on fire hydrants. But other than that,
who doesn't?
It's not that. Well, they're red. Some of them are yellow. So, but I was on this plane. Okay, I don't have the gift of flight. I'm sorry, I lied.
Right.
But I was on a plane, and flying doesn't bother me at all. I'm not nervous about it. But there was one brief moment where when all the screens were down, it was doing that thing that VHS tapes would do where it was, the screen was shaking.
Yeah.
And then I saw them go into a cabinet and change a VHS tape, and I was
like,
all right. Now, hopefully the rest of the technology on the plane is ahead of
post-95,
the half-inch VHS tape that they're running the the movies and all the announcements on. A DVD player.
Did you ever rewinder at home?
A DVD rewinder?
A
VHS.
VHS rewinder.
I mean, a DVD rewinder, which is basically just taking it out and
putting
it in the
sleeve. I'm crazy.
I made a killing on these. Grandmas don't know.
When I worked at Blockbuster, we had
so many grandmas.
We had like 12 of them lined up. So yeah, obviously, if you didn't rewind it, we'd get to charge you just because we had to hit a button.
Right.
But I would put them all in and try to hit them all at the same time. And then it was very exciting for me when they all popped up.
At the same time.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, that's a teenage victory.
That's the entertainment we had in 1999.
That's all we had. That and walking the dog. Those two things were the only two things we could do. Is walk the dog and rewind tapes at the same time.
What was your mom and pop video store called?
Well, I moved a lot when I was a kid. There was one down, let's see, I guess when we moved to Denver, we moved out to Littleton, and it was really just like a prairie at that point. There were we had prairie dogs outside. There was one development.
Wow.
Oh, you guys did a big land grab?
We did a land grab. my dad used to like to fight in bars.
Ireland. Yeah. Your mom's beautiful.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
I think more naturally beautiful in her youth, but still a good-looking lady. Yeah.
Far and away the most beautiful.
Nice.
But,
Ron Howard.
So we did the land grab. Had to shoot the horses, but we got the place, got the property.
Nice.
And then there was one little, like, mini strip thing that was like a beauty parlor and a VHS store and like a sandwich shop, and so I could walk down there. That was the only thing that was in Littleton when I lived there, and it basically, not only did I spend a lot of time there getting movies, but the guy would also just give me the old movie posters.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I just had all these shitty old movies.
Awesome.
I didn't even care
movies
what they
you
were.
Never saw.
And then I didn't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Like, why do I don't need a poster with Shannon Tweed on it, but there you go.
I remember going and asking for specific posters, like when I knew a movie was coming out, like Back to the Future 3. I was like, I need that poster. I really need a fucking giant Mary Steenburgen on my wall.
They had a post-it system, like you would write your name down on a post-it if you were the first one to tag it.
We'll be right back. I love the 80s.
Do you
remember VHS?
Well, I was talking to Scott Mosier about this yesterday on Phoebe. Go ahead and download it. They Do you remember how much videotapes cost before they were in?
Yeah, they were like $90.
I spent $124 on Back to the Future 2.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Why? Did we ever determine why they were so expensive?
I think it was just to have the renter market, like just so video stores could buy them. And
if they were like, if some douchebags cares enough to pay $100 for
it. I mean, it was before. Like, remember,
crazy.
It was insane. It was insane. Because remember the big, like, Batman was the first one I remember that was $19.99 in stores.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
My grandfather was a
Let's talk about Columbia House.
they're probably still trying to collect.
Oh, man. Remember those boxes of CDs?
Yes.
I was like, I guess Sugar Ray. I get an 11th one. I guess Sugar Ray.
I think a lot of people said, I guess Sugar Ray. Yeah. A penny? Well, what's the...
I'm sure.
Clearly, there's no catch to this. Why am I still getting these in the mail? Yeah. What are you charging me for? How dare you, Columbia House? I trusted you.
Oh, man.
Columbia House was great.
My parents had to write so many letters. Sorry, my son is 12.
My mother was great because she just said, okay. And what would happen is whenever a movie came, because they'd send you the movie of whatever the movie of the month they were trying to sell.
Oh, right.
But, like, she let me keep Pulp Fiction in 94.
Wow.
I was 11. And she's like, oh, do you want this? I was like, yeah, I'll watch Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
And whatever we didn't want, she would write "Return to Sender" and just drop back in the.
My grandfather was a technophile. He's the he had all these gaming platforms, and I mean this was in the late 70s, early 80s. But he had like the Atari 2600 and Intellivision and all these.
Skee-ball?
He did not have Skee-ball. No. And he had a Laserdisc player. He had one of the first Laserdisc players, like in 79, I think maybe.
Wow.
And so the movies we had were like Smokey and the Bandit and Grease. But the quality was so amazing. And then he had after that, he also got a Betamax player, and then was I think sort of crusty about it when Beta kind of died out. But I had a rich technological youth.
That's fantastic.
Thanks to my grand. Where did you grow up?
Appreciate for quality here.
You grew up in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I was my parents lived in Manhattan Beach when I was born, and then we moved to Big Bear when I was 6.
Wow.
And then back down to Manhattan Beach when I was 16.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Big Bear? What do you do in Big Bear?
Get
some ice cream, and then on Fridays you go to a video store.
And then you play Resident Evil. My parents could own up there. It was cheap to own property, and then good school systems and safe and clean. Four Seasons, really nice.
Yeah,
childhood.
What about the Big Bear that the town was named?
Yeah. He's still out there.
I mean, you weren't afraid that he was
Bald Bart is still eluding us today.
Snatch the kids.
No, it was great. Holcomb Valley was founded first by James Holcomb. I don't remember. There is some history, in second
Hulk
grade.
Hogan.
Hulk Hogan. Yeah, the great-great-grandfather
he
of Hulk
actually
Hogan.
Founded
Hulk Holcomb.
It by doing a leg drop on the town.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how you have Big Bear Lake.
he pinned the bear for a three count.
Right.
Pinned the Big Bear.
After the atomic leg drop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it was great. It was, snowboard in the winter and play on the lake in the summer.
Nice.
Really nice.
Do you think you'll ever go back there?
Yeah, I try to go back at least once a year.
Do you have a family?
I own my own family.
Yep.
Where do you keep them?
We're down in Venice. We're nice. In Venice Beach.
You guys live in Venice.
Yeah.
How's the wife?
She's very good.
Nice.
She's very good. She's finishing up the last season of How I Met Your Mother, which is pretty crazy. 9 seasons.
Holy shit.
Pretty amazing.
It was a very long story that he had.
Yeah, exactly. Those poor kids.
People know you're married to Kobe, right?
I think so. I still get now and then, like, no way, how did you do that?
you know what's funny is no one ever does that to a girl.
No, for sure.
Whoa, you got Taryn, how'd you land that? Hey, come on, you know, one time. No one's ever gone to my girlfriend Chloe and be like, how'd you land this one?
Right.
You know, it's always the other way around. No,
yeah.
Fuck yourself.
It's good. I don't blame
that. How did you land that? Oh, I don't know. I was a decent human being.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
I was good to her.
Ask her about her interests. Pay for dinners.
How did you fall in love? Is what we're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you love?
It almost seems like what everyone wants some sort of an answer. Like, here's how you trap them.
Exactly. Exactly. You hand them a glowing green vial,
and then you dig out a hole under her welcome mat, and then right to the pit.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Stockholm syndrome sets in. And
they put the lotion in the basket, and slowly they learn to love you.
It's not as dirty as it sounds.
No, it's not.
I mean, you have to put the lotion in the basket. That's where it belongs. And then
look at her complexion. You tell me that there's a problem with the process.
Listen, eventually they'll thank you. But she's so sweet and wonderful and hilarious, yeah. And I've gotten to moderate a couple panels.
Yeah, she's a cool lady.
She's great.
She is. I like her a lot.
You're going to stick with it?
I think so. Things are looking good. All signs indicate a lifetime together, which is nice.
Things are good with the child?
Child's good. Okay. Yeah, we're doing the move to New York, right? Because I've been flying back and forth for 3 years now, three and a half years now, which is a lot of air miles.
Yep.
VHS problems, but I fly
bumped?
Virgin. So
do you
I
get
think
bumped all the time, or do you just first class?
No.
Every...
It depends on when I'm flying.
Yeah.
If it's a red eye, I try to pamper myself.
Why? See, here's I'm going to go and talk about red eyes for a second.
Okay, great.
I prefer when it's a red eye to not bother. I just as long as I get a window, because I'm going to sleep anyway.
Sure.
So what's the point in spending $1,600 on a ticket?
You're a better sleeper than me.
Expedited security, more leg room, better food.
Expedited security you can do for $35. More leg room you can do for also $35.
I need it's the angle of the back. I need the recline.
Since I've lost 55 pounds, okay. I can now do the thing where I put the tray down
and you and lean on it. Yeah.
Oh, that's a way to sleep.
Have you ever seen in the Sky Mall those obnoxious pillows where the person they try to make
obnoxiously
it look
comfortable pillows?
No, those pillow wedges that you're supposed to put on the tray.
Yeah,
you're just supposed to basically zombie flop on it. Like that's supposed it looks comfortable.
I just got weirdly excited for my cross-country flight next week. I'm like ready to sleep.
Matt, how am I supposed to feel financially better than people if I'm not flying in first class?
Well, if you sleep through it, you don't know they have more money.
I can smell that they're near me. I can smell the poverty, Matt. I mean, come on.
I understand.
I need a curtain or a small little rope to separate me.
It's extra, like most of the planes at Virgin, there's only 8 first class seats.
Yeah, exactly.
So you feel extra better than everybody else.
It's really like an exercise in being a human being to not get upset when somebody comes and uses the front bathroom.
Right.
It's such a terrible, I'm a terrible person for even giving this a second thought. Like, of course use that
bathroom.
Use
the bathroom.
Yeah. But definitely.
The 8 of us are fine right now.
Exactly.
You can use the bathroom.
Excuse me, one of us might be thinking about using that now.
It's such an awful moment where you go like, what's wrong with me?
I can't wait for the comments when people are like, I can't believe how lugging these chairs.
Yeah. I know.
We fly a lot, okay?
Yeah.
It's we're also not serious.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, we're not serious.
We weren't. Were you?
Wait.
Huh? Were you serious?
Guys, it's okay.
Well, you were pro coach, so you come off clean anyway. Yeah. For red eye.
You were pro coach and pro coach the sitcom.
You were all over that.
Pro Dobler.
pro
Jerry Van Dyke,
whose character we don't remember the name of.
You've been doing the trek back and forth because you can't not do SNL. You gotta do SNL.
Exactly right. Yeah, it was the goal for so long, and then and I started out at Groundlings and got the opportunity that is still very unlikely percentage wise. But Lorne came to a show that I was doing in the Sunday Company, and
the
flew me
Sunday
out.
Company
the
too.
Sunday Company, yeah.
Nice.
Sunday Company, junior Groundlings, sort of like the up and comers, and then. Flew me out to audition twice within the span of a month for one season. So I auditioned twice and then didn't get it. And then a year went by, stuck with the Groundlings, got into the main company, and then auditioned
again.
You had to audition again. Third time.
Different characters.
It was a charm. Each time was all different material.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the third time, were you like...
or did they tell you to do different?
No, they told me, yeah. All right. Yeah.
But by the third time, did you come out and go... How long are you gonna yank my chain?
There was definitely definitely confidence of you've seen what I can do at this point. I'm gonna do my best material because having that year when they said no, they sort of said it's no but not never. So I was able to kind of work on stuff with the concept in mind that I might get to audition again. So that helped.
Darren, it's Lorne. Listen. Yeah. Kobe, how did you land that?
What are we going to talk about the show?
Come on.
You've got the job. You've got the job.
Look,
Paul Simon and I were talking.
Yeah.
It is.
You guys have spent time with Lorne.
How does it feel? What does it feel like to have your ultimate dream come true?
It's surreal to this day. I would say I'm an emotional guy anyway, but there's a minimum of 2 moments a week where I just kind of like stand back and take it in and get misty eyed just because it's amazing. It was the dream.
And then you walk down that one hall outside the studio and it's just every cast.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you start, it's like a fucking museum.
Yeah.
And then you really kind of feel. I mean, I felt the weight of it just going to watch an episode. Yeah. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, what's
a lot of pressure for you to watch. Yeah.
Well, you did great, by the way.
Thank you.
You were a great laugher,
I came to rehearsal. My ultimate. I've showed up to school with no clothes. Dream.
Yeah.
Is that I'm hosting SNL and I don't remember rehearsing and I'm just being shoved out on stage.
Yeah.
And in between setups, going like, I don't think this is going well. I don't remember what I'm supposed to say. That's my recurring kind of stress nightmare.
It's so close to reality, too. It's a very boring dream, kind of. I go like, oh, the work week? You dream about the work week.
That could happen.
I still have those dreams. I had, like, it was weird. I had a dream a month before I got my first audition.
Was it that one day this great nation would rise up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, I Googled that, and that's been done, so
okay, good.
I stopped dreaming it. I don't care. I don't care about the content of character no longer. But it was like I was in the space, and Lauren's like, you're doing update with me. It was like a dream I had a month before. It was weird. It was weird. Precognitive sort of dream.
And when you started, the first time you did the show,
yeah,
how much or little did you shit your pants?
Getting the show... the first half of the season of my first season, it was just gratitude. It was just like, this is great. I'm here. You let me come here. I'm just going to hang out and you let me know if I'm doing good or not, or don't. Just, I'm glad to be here. And then time sets in and you see yourself succeed. You see yourself fail. You see that happen to others. You kind of start getting in the groove of what's expected and where you are, although nobody ever tells you really where you are on the show. I think that only happens in reflection, really. And then you start to panic, and then the panic sets in of like, oh, I haven't done as much of this, or I haven't gotten a sketch on that I've written in 3 weeks, you know. And then the shit came later. It was a slow shit. It was a slow, slow release, slow sliding shit.
Do you do the scale in your head where you're like, am I the spade this week or am I?
Yeah, like you definitely like the show has such a history, right? There's so like I'm a student of the show. I've read Live from New York. I've read Gasping for Airtime, Bedwetter. Why, you know, anything that I could get my hands on. So you think you know the show coming in, you think you know the do's and don'ts, and then you don't at all, because the show's always changing too. It's 39 seasons and not a single season has been the same in terms of the expectations. I think the expectations start out one way and then you look back on the season like, oh, that's what that season was. That was a great, you know, Sarah Palin was a thing and that's what that season was about. Or we had six new people and that season was about finding out where they kind of what they're capable of and what their voice is, you know. So I also sort of fight against any labeling. Like I go like, oh, you're gonna be the this, and I go, no, I'm not. I'll only write the opposite of that, and then find out that, you know, there's only so much that you can control before you cling to your security blanket like, oh, you do good impressions, maybe you're the impression. No, I'm not. And then, you know, a month goes by and you're not on the show like, hey, I have an impression that you should try, and that's what gets on the air, you know. I have two relationships. I have the relationship of my work. Like, I work on SNL. I know I write on the 17th floor. I rehearse and perform on the 8th floor. And that sketch went good. That sketch, I messed up that line. Or, oh, I wish they'd pick that sketch over that one. And then I'll go home and I'll watch, like, I love the 80s and, like, yeah, SNL. And then see the show and the relationship that I had of watching it on my couch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And being a fan. And I still go back to that. And now there's the extra wrinkle of, oh, they did that on stage 3A. Like, oh, I know a little bit. Like, oh, you know, Chris Kelly, the stage manager, was probably calling 5 seconds before that first initial laugh.
They all
felt
the same thing. There were probably more drugs back then.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they all felt the same thing.
They probably felt just more. They just felt
it times a million.
Yeah,
exactly. They just felt it by a lot.
Yeah.
But it is understandable. I mean, that I always thought that show was kind of my dream job when I was a kid. And then as I grew up and I got more into, like, I like stand-up. I'm not really a sketch guy. Like, when I started to realize what really kind of made me excited about performing, I do think about that job as it feels like it would be pretty easy to get crushed under the weight of having to. I mean, the Sunday Company is a perfect training.
It really is.
Because you have to do a new show every Sunday night.
Exactly right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Writing new material all week. Pitching it Wednesday, putting up a new show Sunday. So I am very grateful. But stand-ups fare very well on the show because what
succeeds most often on the show are hard written jokes. And a lot of sketch comes from character and point of view and attitude and energy and not necessarily set up punchline.
But I think the stand-ups do well on Weekend Update. I think they don't always do well in a scene because a lot of stand-ups are usually just a version
sure,
of themselves.
Sure, as the performer. Right.
Where you don't, you know, guys like Armisen or Will Ferrell or Kristen, they just sort of... They really disappear into characters the way a stand-up is. A stand-up always has an awareness that they're doing comedy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I feel like, you know, were I to ever be on that show, I don't think I would actually do that well unless I got to do like a desk piece where I could do like a monologue. Then I could do okay.
Yeah.
And no one's ever going to ask me to do that. But if they did, that's what I would. That's what I would
do. Yeah. No.
Has Kobe ever hosted?
No.
It's not impossible.
No. It's not.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be cool. Yeah, it'd be cool. I'd be so disappointed if I had a light show.
Hey, honey, I'm not in this.
Oh, you liked Bobby's sketch. Whatever you want. You remember at the table, I didn't have a part in that. But that was cool. No, it'd be awesome. And she'd be great. She's a goofball. She's very pretty, but she's silly as shit.
Funny.
Yeah, she is.
How did you guys meet?
Through a friend. Just like at a birthday party, mutual actor friends. She's Canadian, so I did a pilot with this Canadian actor, and they were buds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So the normal way that normal people meet.
Yeah.
Stars, they're just like us.
Yeah, exactly.
They meet each other at parties.
Yeah, Cat and the Fiddle is sort of where we first started our real flirtation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, roots in L.A.
Oh, Cat and Fiddle.
Cat and Fiddle, man.
It's a wonderful place.
Been good to me.
It is. I haven't been there in ages. And when you don't drink, there's really no reason to go to bars.
Did you go to the World's End premiere?
That was at the Capitol.
Yeah, they had a party there.
Yes, but I didn't. We did not go to the after party.
Gotcha.
We did not go to the after party because I had to get up for something early the next day.
Understood.
That's all right, buddy. It's probably just a TV show you had to get up for.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. I don't fucking care. Party. No, but the Cat and Fiddle's nice. I like a bar that has things to do. You could play darts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, it's like get the outdoor situation happening, but it's not outdoor.
There's a little something for everyone. Yeah. There is food if you want it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Britishy.
Britishy, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Britishish.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. We revolted, but it doesn't mean there isn't still love.
We can all still drink together.
Exactly. Come on.
You can.
Sorry we kicked... sorry about the King George thing.
Yeah.
Have a pint.
Hey, look. Guinness. You love Guinness.
All right, lay down your arms. How long before you... you must be in your production now.
Yeah. We're five deep. I take the red eye tonight. And then Lady Gaga's next week. I don't know when this drops, but at this moment in time, reality,
yes.
Lady Gaga will host next week.
This is on, and this we'll put this up in December to promote The Illegitimates.
Awesome. That's amazing.
Which is
thank
a
you.
Fucking great idea for a
thanks,
comic.
Thanks, buddy. Thank
you
so much.
Do you know the idea for The Illegitimates?
No, but I'm going to read it because he was nice enough to bring us a copy.
Here's the idea. It's basically a James Bond character.
I'm already on board.
And it's all of the, it's like a bunch of the illegitimate children of the women that he fucked around the world who basically get called and brought together. So it's all these.
Love it.
Because he's fucked a lot of them and you never see the aftermath.
Every movie.
And I don't ever see him go, stop, and then pull out a condom
that Q
gave him in a watch.
Exactly right.
So
you'd think he'd have his tubes tied. I don't want to poke holes in your theories.
Oh, you think you think that
he's gelded? You think
after,
that James Bond is...
after Tracy died, I feel like he was like, well,
you know what? I bet you in that reality they probably would. They would probably sterilize a 00, right? Don't you think? So
maybe.
That they couldn't.
I don't know.
I mean, are you worried about him siring? Or are you more worried about disease, though? So what does?
I'm worried about. I think they'd be worried about creating emotional ties and siring.
Interesting.
You know?
Mm. Yeah.
So you're going to have to
go
back
and read this up. Thanks, guys. Thank you for having me. Been 2 years of development, but that's what's great about the collaborative process is there's always room for improvement. Thank you guys so much. Watch SNL on Channel 4 NBC Los Angeles or check your local cable provider
for
listings.
Actually, we found some holes in SNL as well.
Oh, no. All right. Well, it's been a good run. 39 years deep.
This is a fucking awesome idea for a comic.
Oh,
and it's at IDW, and Chris Ryle is fucking awesome.
He's a smart man. He's been fantastic. He's been so helpful. And
they really do they do such innovative, they take chances and they do. Like,
I'm a big Lock and Key fan. And, yeah. Huge. I know.
It's somewhere, that's Joe Hill's comic. Did you read Lock and Key?
Yep.
It's fucking great. But it's in... it was in development, or they did a TV movie or something.
They did a pilot. And I was talking to Chris about that, actually. Chris and Ted Adams, owner of the company, has also been great. And I don't think they had a great process, so they just launched their own studio.
Are they going to make it?
Lock and Key?
Yeah.
I would guess so. I don't know. Hold on, give me 5 minutes.
Hang on a sec.
I'll be right back.
Hang on, before you do that, the problem with Lock and Key
Sure. Okay.
I mean, this is but Illegitimates is such a great idea for, I mean, this is a fucking great idea for like a comedy spy thriller.
This is the stakes are very sincere. It's definitely the launching off point. It comes with a sense of humor, and there's sense of humor within it, but we didn't want to do Austin Powers or even Cody Banks or anything. So very quickly, we move away from our Bond-type
or
character.
Even Cody Banks.
I'm glad you laughed at that, because I wanted to do that, but I didn't feel right about it for some reason.
No one has said those words in like 7 years. Yeah. Or it's not even a Cody Banks.
I saw that in the theater.
I feel like that's implied with most pitches, that it's not even a Cody Banks.
You'd be surprised in pitching it originally.
Some would say Johnny English or In Like Flint, but no, you went Agent Cody Banks.
Yeah,
Agent Cody Banks. That's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
How many issues did you guys?
We're in production with 6 right now, and if it does well, we hope it's ongoing. So 4 is being inked, 5 is being written right now.
So how has the experience been of making a comic?
It's the next dream. I decided to really spoil myself with this life and just partake in seeing another dream come to fruition. My first season on SNL, I was riding in the subway and see this lovely young family, similar to mine, a father, mother, and a daughter. We locked eyes. He said, "Hey, aren't you on SNL?" And I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "You're married to Kobe Smulders." And I said, "Yes." He said, "How'd you do that?" And I said, "All right." And we got to talking. He's like, "She came to our offices." And I was like, "Where do you work?" He's like, "I work at DC Comics." And for Father's Day the year before, she surprised me with a tour of the DC offices, which was awesome.
Nice.
And I was like, "I was on that tour." And I was like, "What do you do?" He's like, "Oh, I'm Mike Martz. I edit Batman comics." And I was like, "This is so awesome. This is the coolest New York moment ever."
That's great.
To be recognized as an SNL featured player and meet the editor of Batman comics. And kept in touch with him and started a friendship. And then about a year later said, "Hey, I have this idea I've been trying to get off the ground." And I wrote this with Mark Andreyko, who's a comic book writer. He's doing Batwoman right now. And I said, I'd been going to him for a while, like, "Hey, can you help me make this a reality?" And our schedules just never synced up. But with the job and with a little cash inflow and with the connections, I decided to kind of pull the trigger. And I produced the first issue. I produced all of them out of pocket, IDW's publishing. But once we had the first one done, we shopped it around to different publishers.
And wow, that's really cool.
It's been pretty amazing to write down, they fight on top of a train and Kevin Sharp, our artist, draw it a million times better than I ever imagined it. It's the coolest collaborative process I've ever been a part of.
What did you learn?
What did I learn? Oh my gosh, so much. So much that I would say the first few issues I had like guilt in that, like coveting the skill of illustration of like, "Man, he did that." I didn't want to note anything, but then there's a few panels that kind of came back to bite us in the butt that we figured out later and learned that in the process, like, no, you got to say that the hand should be on this button because, there's important story points, stuff like that. And also that because it's such a visual medium, my favorite pages are always the ones that have fewer panels on it too.
Yeah.
So like coming from sketch or coming from TV or film where you're writing out everything and it's back and forth and it's a whole conversation, really figuring out how can you express story just through visuals with as little dialogue as possible. And that's been really fun.
Which is a challenging because if you're, like you said, if you're a writer,
then
you want to explain everything. If you're typing on a computer, you want to explain everything with words because you're not thinking, "Oh, then they could probably do something with this to drive it forward.
Maybe this person's stealing that important artifact in the background and that takes care of that scene." You know what I mean? It's just sort of an aside. It's been so much fun.
So the first 6 are all written and they're just in the process. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's nice. you're just done. It's kind of out of, it's almost,
yeah,
it's mostly out of your hands at this point, right?
Yeah.
You still have to do some editing. You'll still have to look at the,
exactly.
But,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it really, it's just feel like you gave birth to like some kind of brain baby. That's
no matter what happens. It's one of the things I'm most proud of and probably will be ever, I think, because it was just sort of like elbow grease and a dream, you know? And I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it. It's nice to kind of like, being that we're six deep, to go back to one. And when they did this first printing, this is the New York Comic Con exclusive, and have that in my hand and flip through the pages as do every Wednesday on other titles that I love. Yeah. It's incredible.
Well, I think it's always cool for people who, when people discover that there's another layer to someone that they see, I think people always really sort of appreciate that. They go, oh, that guy wrote, oh, shit. You know,
yeah,
like,
but
they
yeah.
really like to see that you do other things.
I hope so. Because, I mean, being a comic fan, I knew the sort of uphill battle that I had of being like, I'm a TV sketch performer and I'm going to write a comic. You know what I mean? Of like, no, I have roots in this and I love this storytelling. And it's definitely, you know, my maiden attempt. But I hope there will be others. And this is literally my passion, and even in the process of getting it done, and people saying, "Oh, are you pitching it in other platforms?" I've sincerely pushed against that because the goal for me is to walk into a store and see this on shelves, and then after that, have people actually enjoy it.
I think we stress more about the what people will think, like, "Oh, you're on this thing, you can't do that thing too."
Yeah,
I mean, there's always an element of that, I think.
Yeah,
but I think it's not as bad as you think it's going to be.
Yeah, hopefully
not. And the work speaks for itself, you know.
Yes.
Like, as long as you keep producing these, then eventually people will go, "Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I guess he really does do this thing. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
like
legitimate.
I think it really is just to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Have you ever written comics?
I've never written. I've helped Jerry write some Deadpools.
Nice.
Awesome. For Marvel.
Jerry Duggan.
Jerry Duggan and I shared an office for a little while over at the Nerdist channel. And then I would write fake letters to them. And whenever I would see my name printed in the Deadpool books, I would just get really excited.
That's amazing.
Just to see your name in a comic book.
It's pretty neat.
It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
It really is. And then also I buy some comic art here and there when I can, when I see it come up. I got a couple of pages from Grant Morrison's Ripped.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
RIP.
Wow.
And that's Tony Daniels' artwork, and it's fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Almost thought you were going to say Tony Danza.
Tony Danza's artwork.
Hey, he's got this other.
Check out my comic book.
Angela.
Matt.
Angela, should I ever.
Matt, I got a sell for you. I used to work at Hanna-Barbera.
I used to animate Fred Flintstone's feet. They keep his body still and just animate.
Best job in the world.
Angela, I can't get these hands right.
24 pictures on loop.
I don't know what my Tony Danza is, but you get it.
It almost sounds like a comic book villain.
You know who it sounds like? It sounds like Mike Goldman to me.
Oh, shit.
Hey, DK.
How do you know Mike?
We were repped by Mike and Kaylee.
You and I were there at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had a couple hang sessions in Kaylee's office, I remember.
Right.
And one in particular where you just had like the most bummery commercial audition, it sounded like, and you went to Taco Bell and just had a ton of Taco Bell food. And you're
this
just
is
like,
making
I'm
Matt
just,
very happy.
I'm just done. Like, it's just like I drive 45 minutes and it's like you stand there and they're like for 8 seconds, it's worthless. Crunch.
Yep, I remember. It was probably a double-decker taco.
Nicely done,
which
sir.
Were really good because you'd have the hard-shell taco and then the beans and then the soft shell, so you'd get the two.
There's very little they do wrong. Yeah,
they perfected the whole thing with the Crunchwrap Supreme. Yeah.
That's right. I'm sorry I didn't remember that for a second.
No,
and we
actually
did talk about that a little bit at Comic-Con, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was at Toll and Robbins.
Right.
when they had, I don't know if they still have a management wing, but I think that was right around the time when I kind of thought,
it's behind,
you know,
the library.
this commercial audition thing probably isn't for me because I didn't have the temperament for it, and I never got hired.
Yeah. When did that happen?
2001.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So drunk Hardwick.
It was still drunk Hardwick. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine.
Really...
I can't imagine sober Hardwick plowing down a Taco Bell situation.
No. Not unless they want to sponsor the Nerdist podcast.
Man.
Oh, of course.
Boom.
But until then,
enjoy your burrito. It's a perfect marriage. Right.
I will gladly undo the ability to sleep on the tray. They just send us over some Doritos tacos, which I've yet to taste.
I haven't either.
Have you had
either.
Doritos taco yet?
Yeah.
How is it?
Dorito-y and taco-y. aptly named.
It is what it says. It is
exactly what you want.
They deliver.
If you, Taco Bell, if you're listening and you'd like to send some tacos over, we're located at Meltdown Comics on Sunset Boulevard.
And if not, Chipotle, listen, guys.
Come on.
Enjoy a burrito. Come on. How many times have
we not had a sponsorship at some point from somebody making burritos?
There must be some. I don't know.
Because we could always say, enjoy your Chipotle burrito.
I don't know if people would be too cool
change
with that.
Change it out. Just change it up every week, you know? It would be like the Dana Carvey show.
Oh, see, we could make it funny.
Brought to you by A&W.
Yeah.
We've talked about Anna's Taqueria at length in Boston.
Yeah, and they won't even fucking follow me back on Twitter.
Aww.
You know how many people I've sent in that goddamn store?
Matt's making a list. He's making a mental list.
I had recently the best name drop payoff of a brand. We did this video called Boy Dance Party and put Shake Shack in there. And I don't know if you guys have had Shake Shack. Yeah.
The line's always too fucking long.
It's crazy because it's that delicious, that good. Yeah. They sent literally a dining room table full of food the next Tuesday. It was
We'll fantastic. Take it, guys. Come on.
The perks.
Send it over.
We'll take it.
Zanku Chicken, are you listening?
What's your favorite burrito? What's your favorite Mexican food in L.A.?
Oh, God, that's tough.
In L.A., Frank's on Fairfax, right by the Writers Guild West.
Okay.
Get their Chile Rano is great.
Awesome.
Their breakfast burritos are out of this world.
Wow.
Oh, I ate at one. There was one good one on Olivera Street, but I can't remember the name of it.
The sit-down, really authentic.
Yeah.
I know it is. Awesome.
I can't remember the name of that one.
So good.
What about the best fish tacos in Ensenada?
I don't like fish tacos.
Well, listen, I just like the name.
Okay, good. Okay.
They literally call their store the best fish tacos.
Oh, that's the name of it?
Ensenada. That's the name of the whole store?
Yes. No. You're misunderstanding. This isn't the ranking. It's just the name of the store. No one says we can't call it that.
You guys watch Nathan For You, yeah?
No, what?
Nathan
no.
For You? You don't know Nathan For You on Comedy Central?
I haven't seen it.
You guys got to see it. The guy's brilliant. Nathan, I'm blanking on his last name. It's so funny. He's basically like a business major who now is going to help businesses, but it's a comedy show.
Oh, I've seen the promos for that.
It's so funny. And one he does is he finds a burger place in the valley in Van Nuys that says LA's best burger. And he goes, great, I'm going to help you, get the word out there. Because I think that's their only problem. If you have the best burger, the only thing holding you back is that people don't realize yours is the best. So they go on a radio station, and it's Kiss FM or whatever. And they're for 4 hours, we're going to be giving out burgers. And if it's not the best burger you've had, we will give you your money back. Or no, we'll give you $100, I think, or something like that. And you see this sweet little burger shop owner go, wait, what? Can't say anything. And then outside the radio station, he's like, I don't know if that's a good idea. And then he's like, why? What are you worried about? It's the best burger, right? He's like, yeah, it's the best. It's the best. They're like, well, then you have nothing to worry about. And he ends up. The guy's so stressed, he's like, I'll tell you what, I'll put my money on the line. It won't be your money. And then just the parade starts of people going, it's not the best burger.
Where's my
it's not the best burger I had. I just want my $100. It's not the best burger. And Nathan sits down a couple, and they're like, listen, it's a very good burger. It's just not the best I've ever had. And they're like, really? All right. This has happened a lot today. So we're going to have to let some employees go. And he brings the girl out, and he's like, you need to tell her she's fired.
Yeah.
And that's just one of many, many segments he does.
God damn it. Funny. I'm missing television as it's happening because I'm...
It's hard.
Because you're making so much of it?
You're making it.
Well, yeah, man. I'm making a lot of television. Yeah. You're coming on Talking Dead soon, aren't you?
I want to. I was supposed to come this evening and had a prior engagement.
Oh, okay.
But I will anytime.
What was more important than talking about zombies?
Hollywood game night.
Shit.
Sorry.
Jay Lynch strikes again.
I know. You've just been lynched.
She just shows up with a bunch of games. Shit.
Please. Up. She's so tall.
That's kind of
I would love to. I was Walking Dead. I was a huge, huge Walking Dead comics fan. So it's been interesting watching the series happen.
Yeah, well, are you still reading the Walking Dead comics?
I'm still reading.
Still. I don't have enough patience to wait until the collections come out.
Right.
And so every week, well, I don't want to spoil anything, there's one character that I really want to fucking die. Yeah. And every week I think it's about to happen, and you read the thing in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You're like, God damn it.
Come on.
When are they going to kill this fucking guy? When are they going to kill this fucking guy?
Yeah, but can't you just see Kirkman's face just smiling time he doesn't do it?
You're too close to the source now. He knows that. He's probably just fucking with you.
Well, he is, and he has a really, his attitude about it is, I'm like, when are you going to fucking kill this guy? And he was like, get the fuck over it. Like, he just openly mocks me.
Yeah, I love that guy.
He just openly mocks me. It's funny, I got a did I talk about this in the podcast? I got a text from Kirkman a couple weeks ago, and it said, well, this is that. Maybe I did talk about this. If I talked about this, cut it out, Katie.
They don't mind hearing a story again.
Some people
the way
do.
You tell things, it's so entertaining.
All right. Oh my God. See, that sounded sarcastic. And then you turned and laughed at Taryn like you were making him to get in on it. But I got a text from Kirkman that said, wow, that was about as awkward as Talking Dead last week, referring to the Marilyn Manson episode.
Oh,
and I was
wow.
like, yeah, it was kind of awkward. And he wrote back and he was like, whoops, that was supposed to be for Scott Gimple. Something had happened.
I wonder what that situation awesome. Was.
What?
Like, I wonder what was as awkward as the Talking Dead. Like, I wonder what.
I don't know. I don't know. It was some sort of. I don't know what it was. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask. I was like, well, you know. And he was like, oh no, man, great job. And I'm like, yeah, well. But it was just funny that I caught that. And he was like, oh, your texts were right next to each other. Sorry about that.
That's amazing.
But as awkward as that episode was, it will. If you know the
people
show,
talk about it
will go down in as our most talked about episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What have there been any moments on SNL that were unintentional, like, oh, well, I guess that's the thing they're going to talk about now forever?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, like, big deal. I'm trying to think. You write everything hoping that they'll talk about all of it, so there's never, like, a surprise of, like, wait, that's what people enjoyed? But I will say most often, whatever is the writer's or performer's favorite is the one that people do not like at home. Like, that's a consistent guarantee for the most part.
The ones that you're most excited.
The one you're like, this is brilliant, this is awesome, no one has ever sketched like this. And it's like, seen it. Like, wait, what?
That's what happens in stand-up. When you like a joke too much, I feel like what's happening is that it is too inside your own brain.
Sure.
And
sure.
other people just don't have a way in. So when you're like, I cannot wait to drop this comedy napalm on the audience.
Yeah. That's also what makes watching the Sklar Brothers so fascinating.
What?
Because there's not a reference that either of them don't get. So when they're riffing off of each other, when Randy and Jason are riffing off of each other, there's nowhere they can go that the other one can't immediately be right behind them.
Oh yeah,
totally.
They're one brain.
So yeah.
It's great.
Really funny.
Did you ever do stand up? You did stand up.
No. I tried once. My buddy Brian Callen got me to try once. You know Brian? Yeah.
Of course.
He got me to try once in the attic of the Westwood Bruco. And it was miserable.
Tuesday
it was
awful.
It was like three people. Yeah, I
not
went
anymore.
On at like quarter to two. It was rough.
Brian Callen. Well, I did Mad TV in 1996.
Did you really?
I did a guest spot.
Oh,
there's not a single lady on Sunset that doesn't know Brian Callen.
There's it was... They did this thing, Ozark Mountain singled out.
Amazing.
And of course... The brother ended up with the sister. That was
perfect.
The function of the sister. But it was
did Blaine write that?
He might have. I think Blaine and Patton were on the show at that time.
Oh, funny.
But it was Brian Callen, Artie Lang, Nicole Sullivan,
Phil Lamar,
Deborah Wilson.
Season one, right?
Season one or two.
Yeah,
might have been
really
season.
Already made it into two.
Really?
No, I think he wanted out way before that.
Then I guess it was season one.
Got arrested in the parking lot.
The other person on the show was Barry Williams, TV's Greg Brady.
Amazing.
So that was a fun experience.
Wow.
That might be on the internet somewhere.
It's got to be.
That sounds exciting.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I didn't really have to do anything other than play myself, but then I got to be like, I'm doing sketch comedy. I wasn't doing sketch comedy.
Yeah.
I was really just playing myself. I was fucking playing myself.
Blaine was telling me a story about when they were doing the pilot for Mad TV, and they're all sitting around, and David Cross was there, because he worked on the pilot as well.
Oh, wow.
They were talking about Nicole Sullivan's character, the beauty lady. I don't know if you remember. She was just like,
wasn't there one who was a nurse?
Yeah, but she did this character that was like worked at a beauty counter.
Okay.
Was like a cosmetologist or whatever. And, you know, and then just whatever her inflection was, that was the character. And everybody at the table's laughing. And then the EP goes, does anybody have any notes or questions about this? And then David Cross goes, that's not so much a character as it is just a character trait. and then the EP just goes, all right, moving on.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you are watching Mad TV.
Well, that's got to be
Cross
that's
took
be
his name
just
off
post?
Of the show.
Post? Mr. Show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
no, no, pre.
Oh, it's pre.
It's right before.
Yeah,
pre.
It's right before. Okay.
Yeah, that was 95, 96.
They maybe should have listened to that guy then, huh?
Well, but I think you can see, like, the sensibility of Mr. Show was not really the sensibility. No.
The sensibility of Mad TV, from what I hear, was just every character and every sketch they wanted to turn into a movie. They wanted it to be something they could turn into a movie.
Did they ever do that?
No.
They never did.
No, I did half a season on Mad TV, and... Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, right out of college, I went to UCLA.
Me too!
Yeah.
What do we talk about
this
before?
Guys, be best friends. Have
fun. I don't know if we've addressed the UCLA thing.
Okay, finish your Mad TV story, and then we'll talk about the 8-clap.
Right out of freshman year, hired half a season. So I did, like, 13 episodes. And I got hired with Bobby Lee and Catherine Fiore. And, like, it was a weird thing where when you get hired as a featured, you're hired for 4 episodes. And then if they like you, they'll not like in a row. So like I did like 2 in October and 1 in November and 1 in December, something like that. And then they'll pick you up for the back 9. And I was talking to Phil Lamar about this recently. And I remember hearing at that time, like, it was just chaos. Like, I had no idea also. I was in way over my head. I was so underprepared. And a lot of people that I liked and respected had come from the Groundlings. And that's what led me to it. Like, after I did Mad TV, I started taking classes at Groundlings. But it was just like there was 3 heads. There was like an EP and then a head writer and then like these 3 kind of like ever present producers, but seemingly just from a financial standpoint. So there's so many chefs. There's just so many chefs, and cast and writers were kind of kept separate too. But I always remember like people saying it was said a few times, like, well, you think it's tough here. It's even worse at SNL. And that is so not true. That's just not the truth. That's just 100% not true.
Well, we tell ourselves.
Maybe at the time. Who knows?
Maybe at the time. Maybe at the time. Very true. Yeah,
so let's talk about UCLA. What did you?
UCLA. UCLA. Fight, fight, fight.
Cool.
I went for musical theater.
Uh-huh. North Campus.
And yeah, McGowan Hall, a lot of class in McGowan, and then stayed at Hitch Suites my freshman year.
Oh, you got the suite.
I got the suite. I wanted my life to be Saved by the Bell, the college years,
as much
as possible.
There were dorms, then there were a couple of buildings that were actually like suites, that were like apartments, which were different than dorms. I never had on-campus housing because there was a shortage. They had to build other structures after I left.
Right. Was Dykstra or what? Sunset?
Dykstra Hall.
Nice. Is that named after Chloe's dad?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think so. But my girlfriend's last name is Dykstra.
Oh, okay.
Is it named after Lenny Dykstra?
It was not. I don't know who it was named.
Popular baseball player, terrible businessman, Lenny Dykstra.
So where did you stay? Were you Sproul?
No, I didn't.
You didn't get any housing?
Didn't get any housing. I commuted from Pasadena the first year where my parents lived, which was not fun.
Ambitious.
And then, I missed a lot of class that year. And then 8 a.m. class.
No.
I always felt like, I'll do 8 a.m. class, and I'm really going to hunker down and really... In practical application, I never made those classes. But but I think Dykstra Hall was the first hall I ever did stand-up in. UCLA Comedy Club, we had a little stand-up comedy group, and we used to do dorm shows. And I think Dykstra Hall was the first time, which was right across from Hitch Suites.
First place I ever went up was that shitty Bruco.
Was it?
Westwood Brewing Company.
There's like two rooms. There's one where like it was kind of a legitimate stage, and then there was
the side room, the little annex space.
Oh, and I don't mean the show. The people that ran it, and it was fun, but was just shitty to be upstairs.
The last time I ever drank alcohol was at the Bruco show.
Oh, yeah?
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I'd always walk in
October
on Tuesdays.
October 7th, 2003.
I remember the date.
Well, you should.
Yeah,
that's huge. That's huge. You know, there's like a whole process remembering.
It's a big deal.
What?
Like,
and then October 8th, I quit drinking in honor of Matt Damon and Hillary Swank's birthday. I don't know why I know that. Oh, I do know why I know that. Because when I first quit drinking, not that we're talking, I'm sorry, we're talking about me now. But when I first quit drinking, I had a calendar on my wall, and I would cross off each day that I didn't drink.
What calendar would you have on your wall that would say Hillary Swank or Matt Damon's birthday on it?
Oh, my God. Is it celebrity birthday calendar?
It was the celebrity birthdays of people who would be the male or female counterparts of each other calendar.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And so.
Same teeth. I like it. All right.
Strong jaw. Same teeth.
Listen, I could totally see Matt Damon in Million Dollar Baby or Boys Don't Cry.
Sure.
Or vice versa. Or Hillary Swank could have been in the Bourne Identity.
Incredible talents, both of them.
Both of them. Yeah. And they're swappable. Genderly swappable.
Yeah, both fantastic.
Especially in gender swapping roles.
Yes, of course they could be. Either one of them. They could have both been in Mrs. Doubtfire, and either
one.
And it would have worked. It would have worked.
Why would you mess with perfection?
I'm not saying I'm going to remake Mrs. Doubtfire with Hillary Swank or Matt Damon.
But you're not saying you're not.
No, but I think Mrs. Doubtfire should have gone on to be like a CIA operative or something. Don't you think so?
The man was just a
isn't that the master of disguise?
He was just a voiceover.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I saw that in the theater, too.
Right before he kills someone?
Hello!
Master of Disguise, like, on paper, I was like, oh, fuck, Dino Stamatopoulos, Dana Carvey is going to be, like, the best movie ever.
Oh, Master of Disguise.
Yeah. Fucking, there's, like, 20-minute scene of Brent Spiner's character farting.
Turtle.
Turtle.
They tried.
So you studied musical theater. You were in North Campus.
Yep.
I was all over that campus. I did a little South Campus for a while, and then I did I settled in Dodd Hall in the philosophy.
I never met a hydrant. He didn't come on at the North Campus.
A what?
Hydrants, they're still mutant hydrant babies wandering
around.
I think
he said a Hydra.
Hydra babies.
I was like, I don't know why
Hydra.
He took a mythological
all the
Aaron
Zemo
off,
right?
Is still loose on
the Hydra.
You'd fuck a Hydra.
Yeah, sure. Well, just to say you did.
Fuck a Hydra.
Yeah.
Which Aaron, you'd fuck a Hydra, right?
Mythical creature Hydra?
Yeah.
More mouths to fuck.
Yeah, seriously. You could fuck all the mouths.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could come like 9 times on a Hydra.
Guys, we could all do it. It wouldn't be gay.
Seriously.
Do the same Hydra.
You get a different experience. Some Hydra heads swallow, other ones spit it on your face. It's like you get a little, mix it up a little bit. You mix it up a little bit.
You don't
want
to kiss him in the mouth? You cut the head off. And now you got 3 more mouths to fuck.
One mouth suck your cock, another mouth go around lick your butthole.
Hey, come on.
He's good.
He's good.
You fuck that Hydra?
We got like Perseus' sword or something, you know what I mean? You cut the throat.
Piece of cake.
Yo, we're going to go to that party on Friday, right? I heard it's going to be a Hydra there.
Oh, shit.
I don't like Kappa Kappa Delta. Their Hydra's a priss, but this one over here.
Broods.
You are watching
the way those, like,
TV.
Steel turtlenecks. Yeah, exactly.
That was... The Hydra orgy. That, now that's got to be a thing.
It's got to be. We'll
I'm sure there'll be
There's
got
to be some flash animation.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna, okay,
we can go to Bento Box. I'll do have a cheap.
Here's the sketch. Here's the sketch.
Okay,
there's like a fraternity on Mount Olympus.
Great.
This is basically just like a frat party, but it's
frat
guys.
What's the theme of the frat party?
It's a toga party, but we do togas every day. I know.
Pantsuit party. This is gonna catch on. This is huge.
Pantsuit. Oh, god damn it. Fun, see?
Really fun.
There we go. So you could take that to work next week.
You know, you could take that to work. You're going to see a Gaga Hydra.
Gaga Hydra.
Mark my words.
Oh, shit.
Do you already... Now,
that's just
so,
what she wears for the dress rehearsal.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, sorry, for the musical performance, she's wearing a Hydra costume.
Hey, by the way, I do want to... I glossed over it, but I think it is so admirable and respectable that you are spending time with your family tonight instead of doing a television show.
I'm
doing a different
it's
television
Jane
show.
It's Jane Lynch's television
program. I thought you were just spending time with your family.
I know. No.
Oh, Darren.
I am because my wife's doing it with me.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Okay. That's cool, right?
Oh.
That's a loophole.
Does that have an after show?
Please, let's do it.
Talking game night.
Meet him on the Radford line.
Now, when you were trying to get them to guess Aaron Paul McCartney, you went for Breaking Bad because it's more topical. But and yet Paul McCartney is an icon. I would have done something with Beatles. You know, it's a great. Point.
My love does it good, bitch.
Today, are you're taping that tonight?
Yeah.
Do they tell you what games you're going to be playing beforehand?
Okay. No.
Oh, by the way, Emeth, fucking hilarious.
So great, right?
Fucking amazing.
Yeah. He literally flew from us to you.
Oh, it's
like he left the show and hopped on a plane to pick up the people from the airport in the RV and come do the
He's
the
an
after
animal.
Show. Man.
I don't know how he does it, that Aaron Paul.
Man.
I don't know. But the thing that's so great about him is that he's genuinely not... He doesn't have an ounce of like, whatever.
It's no.
Like, he's so excited.
Yeah.
And, like, he, you know, he knows that people want him to say, like, hey, bitch. And he fucking does it.
Yeah.
And he's delighted that they're delighted. And, like, he's just so, excited about it that that makes me like him even more, that he appreciates,
totally,
you know?
Yeah.
Because with a fucking closet full of Emmys and like, he fucking, you know, he could totally be like, I'm over it now.
Totally.
Why would he put him in his closet?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'd put an Emmy closet out on the mantle.
That's an Emmy closet.
Coffee table.
I don't know.
I'm just waiting to move a Batman statue.
I guess.
Emmy up.
I guess. You can paint it.
Yeah. It's the Batman statue painted gold with the wings taped on, holding the globe. Emmy spelled with one M.
That's right. So, are you already thinking about? Do you have stuff brewing in the back of your head for this next week?
Yeah, but that means nothing. that means absolutely nothing. We have a pitch on Monday, so you need to have 1 to 2 ideas just to pitch out loud to her and say, oh, you doing the Hydra, you're at a Mount Olympus pantsuit party and you're a Hydra, so that, you know, I guess, wait, now that I'm saying out loud, I guess it's a, like, run a train on you? I don't have any. Never mind. But yeah, you do that, and then Tuesday you kind of sit down with writers or by yourself sometimes and start typing away. But everybody, writers and cast, each person can submit 2 sketches
that
are their idea.
Who's hosting next week?
It's Lady Gaga.
Oh, it is Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Well, no, he said Gaga. I didn't realize that she was actually...
Well, she's a triple threat.
Yeah.
I don't she's hosting know and she's what music, the third one is.
Oh, she's hosting and music.
Yeah. Styling?
Yeah. 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 That's her third threat.
Causes?
Causes. She loves causes.
Good causes?
Yeah.
Is she funny?
I think so. So
you sound like what probably Lauren said
right,
in an
right,
office.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
Yeah, she did one sketch when Timberlake hosted a season or two ago, and she was great in it. She's playing herself, but she was great. She good timing.
Cool.
Gives me hope.
Yeah, I think the most interesting part about that would be having celebrities come in, but then not really knowing like what their buttons or sensitive parts are.
Absolutely.
So you just kind of pitch something and hope they're not like, what did you just say to me?
Totally.
Ultimately, you want them to make fun of themselves.
Exactly.
So it's sort of a dangerous...
Yeah. It is, yeah. And it's definitely happened where people have crossed the line at pitch.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's
okay, without naming any names.
yeah, what... God... There was one pitched. There's one like, oh man, this is hard. This is hard without revealing.
You don't have to say who it
out.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, but like in the reveal, like a pitch of somebody's movie, and you could tell it was a movie that they weren't proud of, and the response was just, "Wait, what?"
And then everyone immediately trying to figure out how to back.
And the host always checks in with Lauren because they've just been hanging out with Lauren, so that's kind of the only connection they have, unless they know somebody on the show. So I'm like, what? You know, and then it's on you to go like, no, not that one. An idea where you're a, you know, stoner giraffe.
Okay, here's what you have to do in the pitch office. You have to have a breakaway window
exactly.
that goes out to a mattress so you can be like, I'm out of here. And then you just dive through the window. Yeah. So then it'll sort of break it up with comic relief.
I prefer that each writer and cast member
has
had
to
a
sit in
specific
it.
Spot on the wall where their cutout was already put in the wall.
Right arm up,
and they
left
just
arm
knew
down.
Where to run every time.
And that celebrity has to sign the thing.
That's how Hole in the Wall started, I think.
That's how it was. Well, this is great. That was an hour.
That's it. That's
Can you
so
believe
fast.
It fucking goes
really
fast.
Wow. That's so fast.
I'm so glad. Yeah, because we got to. You know, those fucking old days at Tolan Robbins.
Yeah, man.
We were both just
struggling,
young and
out.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And
now older and trying to figure it
still
out.
Still trying to figure it out. Still just trying to figure out different things. But it really did seem so daunting at the time. I guess it really. The good thing for anyone listening who's just starting any type of, you know, it doesn't even have to be in the entertainment business, but I remember at that time feeling like, this is never going to work out. How could it possibly work out?
Absolutely.
There are a million people trying to do what I'm doing. How could it possibly? And the business makes sure you stay in a place where you feel like it's never going to work out.
Yes.
So the good news is that you and I are proof that it can work out
if you
fucking stick with it.
Yeah. You're here. It's amazing. If it all goes away,
I'll get
grateful
there,
for what it is. Sorry, man. You're proof of nothing.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
You're proof,
no,
proof
be...
of the sleep on a plane diet, I guess?
Yeah. No, you got to have the reaction of, wait, what? Like, you got to have the, you just crossed the...
wait, what, Taryn?
Anyway, well,
this is what I don't understand.
We'll probably try to do a what up with that.
Like if you go on a show like that, you really should just emotionally be like, it's all fair game. Whatever you want to make fun of, It doesn't matter. I've done some good things and I've done a lot of shitty things, and you can make fun of whatever you want.
And the best hosts do. And that's the host that the show likes. Because it's that weird thing of SNL where, like, the audience has ownership of it, and rightly so. And I went from being a fan of it my whole life and knowing exactly how to fix it, exactly who was funny, who wasn't, what they should do more of, what they should do less of, and being like, you know, such a judger of the show, to getting hired and being like, I was a fool. I didn't realize so much more goes into this. It's a beautiful process, and people are working their asses off, and it's really hard. And everybody's a beautiful, unique snowflake.
What are you screaming immediate. About in the corner over there?
Snowflakes.
I'm trying out a character. It's kind of just a caricature trait.
Okay. And then that becomes yells, like,
are you going to do Snowflake this week?
Yeah, exactly.
Snowflake movie.
Well, listen, look, all I'm saying is, if you ever were going to do an after show sketch, you could play me.
I'll take that as a compliment.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'll do
it. And
then
it got really desperate at the end of the podcast where Hardwick was trying to beg his way.
Choking me.
You're a dead man, Valentine. I just watched Trading Places again. I'm sorry.
So good.
Have you ever seen it?
Of course you did.
Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, of course I've seen Trading Places.
It holds up. I will say one thing. In a lot of the comedies that I loved when I was a kid, so much more racism than would be acceptable now.
Oh,
that
the gorilla
48
stuff?
Hours.
Yeah.
Like,
watermelon and spear chucker.
All
it's
of
crazy.
It. Every bit
it's
of
crazy.
It.
Crazy.
Bowfinger.
No, that one was good.
What?
That one was fine.
Did that hold up?
That was really fun. Yeah, but but in general, Trading Places.
Yeah,
it's so funny because I was watching it with Chloe, and then then in the scene on the train where it's Franken and Davis, and I go, "Oh, that's Senator Al Franken," and she was like, "What?"
Yeah,
she didn't realize. Yeah.
She doesn't understand that Al Franken was one of the great comedy.
Somebody's in blackface in there, right? Is Dan Aykroyd?
Is Dan
blackface?
Aykroyd?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
how else is he going to trade places?
Sure.
Well, because he would recognize. Every one of those movies when they had SNL people on, there was always the part where you're like, and then of course I got to go into crazy characters.
Yeah, right.
But of course, but you know, I watched that and reasoned, okay, yes, I'm slightly uncomfortable that he is in full blackface.
Yeah.
But Clarence Beeks would have recognized him otherwise, you guys.
For sure.
That's what I say every time I watch A Day at the Races and the Marx Brothers get in blackface to hide from the people looking for them.
Oh, no. A Day at the Races. Races.
Oh,
you see the subtle undertone? That's really what they were talking about.
Vaudeville
is layered.
They were saying this is wrong. So The Illegitimates comes out December 18th, I think.
Yes, sir.
On IDW, and you absolutely should pick it up, and you should watch Taron kill him and hug him. And you know what? Next time see Kobe, I'm going to be like, how did you fucking land that guy?
Thank you, sir.
Seriously.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's so good to see you, and congratulations
really
for everything.
Thank you for having me.
You're the nicest, sweetest dude in the world, and it's so
cool
great
to
watch all of the stuff happening.
Thanks, man.
So
thank you. Same right back at you.
Best of luck,
and
sir.
Matt, you'll figure it out.
Oh, my God.
Someday.
If Jonah were here, he'd be
someday.
On the floor. Oh, enjoy your burrito, everyone. Chipotle.
Or Anna's. I mean, anybody, really.
But Anna's is regional. I mean, like Chipotle or Taco Bell. Or I even would have said at one point Baja Fresh.
El Tarasco in Manhattan Beach is my favorite Mexican food restaurant.
El Tarasco?
Yeah.
What
Rosecrans, Manhattan
almost,
Beach.
You almost didn't tell us.
You almost didn't ask. I think that's the way I knew.
Didn't ask. Yeah, it was my fault. It was bad host.
Well,
bad host.
You know,
the AV Club says a lot of things, Chris.
What? That's the fucking Hydra I want to fuck every mouth of. I'm gonna shut this one up and sweet. Shut that one up.
But they're so good at reviewing content.
Yeah.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Hydra.
Hydra.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.